Borada, good morning everybody. My name is Sian Gale and I'm one of the people on the IWA media group who's been sort of looking at this sort of very important session on the workforce. And it's a session that's often sort of missed out on these sort of events. So for us, I think we're very sort of passionate about it and hope that it'll be a very lively session. In terms of the industry, there has been a move for several years now, and increasingly so with the sort of emergence of BBC studios, where people are moving away from permanent employment to sort of freelance employments, micro businesses, and employees on fixed term contracts. And what sort of that responsibility mean in the long term? It means that the responsibility for finding work, paying taxes, sick pay, maternity, paternity, etc., goes to the individual rather than to the employer. We can't discuss everything about the workforce today. We only have a very short time. We could be here all week, actually, in discussing such an important topic. But we have broken it into three sections. So we're looking at sort of sustainability, getting in, getting on, moving on up in the sector. Training and development, existing and future workforce. How does the creative industries look for them? And diversity, I mean, for some of us who sort of have grey roots these days, it's been something that many of us have been banging on for years, but unfortunately the situation hasn't improved in terms of representing the communities that we're actually serving. I mean, there are more and more people from public school, sort of at the higher echelon of the industry, and socioeconomic diversity is not particularly strong in the sector. But there are also other types of diversity that we're poor on here in Wales, as with the rest of the UK, in terms of gender, in terms of women in specific roles, and men in specific roles, actually, in terms of black and Asian minority ethnic people, very lowly represented, and in terms of disabled people. They don't always have very good access to the industry that we would hope. So how do we make this an industry in Wales where everyone can survive and thrive? But anyway, that's enough from me, and I'm delighted to introduce our chair today, Catriona Noonan. She's a lecturer at Media Communications at the Cardiff School of Journalism, Media and Cultural Studies, JOMEC, and she is an active researcher in the areas of television production, creative labour, and cultural policy. Croeso.
Okay. Thanks, Shad. I will stand for this bit if you don't mind. There are some questions on DuPol if you want to kind of follow with those, and if we have time at the end, we'll get to those. The Welsh media landscape has changed in the last 5 years, and I think this is a hugely timely panel. A useful moment to kind of take a beat, take a moment to think about the workforce and the nature of the work that's done here in Wales. To think about how we can leverage some of the successes that we've enjoyed over the last couple of years and perhaps mitigate some of the challenges that are coming our way. And that's the formidable question that we're kind of thinking about today with my panel. How, over the next 5 years, do we create a diverse and skilled labour force that creates meaningful work here in Wales, but also enjoys a decent work life? How can we reconcile those three things? And I'm delighted to be joined by an esteemed panel. Here on my right, Alex Martin. Alex is with Creative Skillset. He is oversees their development, he manages and develops their TIC accreditation program. David Donovan, who many of you will know, is negotiations officer, BEC2 in Wales, representing about 2,500 of our workers here in Wales. And Gareth Powell, who's the chief operating officer at BBC Wales. We've had apologies from Anna Mallett from BBC Studios. She sends her apologies because of personal circumstances, she can't be here. And I'd like to thank Gareth for standing in at the last minute. Gareth is responsible for operational performance and financial matters at BBC Wales. He also has overseen Rothlock, so I think he'll have a lot to input on that. And of course, oversees at the moment the Central Square development. I'm keen to give the speakers quite a lot of time to speak, but I'm also keen to give you time to ask questions. But I just want to give a little bit of context first about some of how the industry here in Wales looks. So, the numbers. Welsh Government tell us that employment in the creative industry sector in Wales has increased by over 50%, and that's in the last decade. And there's now about 53,000 people employed in the creative industries here in Wales. Nearly a third of these are self-employed, and that is hugely significant when we think about the nature of employment, when we think about things like, for instance, flexibility and job security. A across the UK within the television workforce, Creative Skill Set, tell us that this is a very skilled and educated workforce. 74% of those people who work in the TV industry have a degree. Although most of you will know that people have worked for free, or that the experience of working free is quite common, 50% of people say that they've worked for free within the industry. And as Sian said in the beginning, this becomes hugely problematic when we think about opportunities and access. How can we ensure that all communities across Wales, within Cardiff and beyond, have access to the same opportunities within the TV industry? So what's happened in the last 5 years? Well, one of the things, one of many things that have happened, is that we've had substantial investment in physical infrastructure. Pinewood Studios, Bay Studios, Dragon Studios, and of course, Rosslock. In 2013, Ruth McElroy from University of South Wales and I did a project looking at some of the rationales for Rosslock and some of the kind of ambitions for that particular project. And what we found is that the industry was very positive about it as a development. They could see a confidence from it, or they could develop a confidence with it, and it was definitely putting Wales on the map. Although it was relatively early in its development, it had the potential to offer real value to the sector, to new entrants coming into the industry, to those at mid-career, in terms of particularly around the returning series that it housed, and of course of securing network talent. However, our research also revealed wider issues with the creative workforce. Success means demand. Can the Welsh workforce respond to the demands of particularly big budget productions? Weaknesses in the workforce, and particularly around certain skills or maybe certain roles, become apparent very quickly. And so this needs to be managed very carefully and very creatively. And it's often trying to reconcile the kind of long-term development that's needed for labour with the short-term project nature of television production. So that was the last 5 years. What about the next 5 years? The Welsh Government has had a manifesto commitment for 40 million a year in expenditure production. It's going to create at least 100 new companies over the next 5 years and 4,000 more jobs in the creative sector. This is going to be partly achieved through an agency called Creative Wales, which will be developed later in the year. And this agency for this particular panel has two roles, one around developing what they call a constant pipeline of skills, and the other in promoting Wales nationally and internationally as a base for production. Like us here today, that agency is going to have to negotiate lots of different tensions. And there's three for me that I think are particularly prevalent within the industry at the moment. The first one, how do we achieve efficiencies and flexibilities at the same time as ensuring viable careers for our workers? How do we promote the Welsh workforce internationally without eroding its long-term sustainability locally? The second tension I see is between what I would regard as a kind of the conceptual lure of meritocracy and entrepreneurship. The idea that everybody will get on in their career with the right attitude and the right talents, an innate talent. How do we reconcile that with the realities that we see in terms of some of the structural inequalities, as Sian has mentioned, around gender, around age, around disability, around socioeconomic status that we have here? The unions have long talked about these issues, and I would imagine quite grateful to see that these issues are of a much wider discussion, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of these initiatives over the next 45 minutes or so. Another kind of final tension, though maybe more kind of a balance I see rather than a tension. How do we get the right mix of strategies that build an indigenous workforce and balance that with the kind of strategies that attract labour to this industry, to Wales, either from other places or from other industries, gaming, design, data collection, things like that. So these are some of the tensions that I think we will discuss here today. In anticipation of this event, the IWA has commissioned a number of blogs, and I would greatly encourage you to have a look at those. There's a number of them around. Issues of labour, and one of the things I was very much struck by was some of the really interesting initiatives that these blogs point to. One initiative is around Hijinks Agency, which is a talent agency for actors with Asperger's or other learning difficulties. And then the second one was Film Comedy Wales's Foot in the Door programme, which was just launched in the last couple of days. And this is offering practical work to socially, economically deprived participants in South East Wales. As I was reading these and I was thinking about my own research around small nations, I began to think, does our status as a small nation, a successful and creative small nation, allow us to do things differently, afford us an opportunity to think differently about the workforce, about the people who work there, and about the kind of opportunities they can enjoy? And it was that in mind that I asked each of my panelists to think, or I set them the challenge of thinking, what is the biggest challenge and opportunity that the Welsh workforce have at the moment? And so I'm going to begin with that. Gareth, I think I'll start with you, if that's okay, and we'll work maybe across the panel, if that's all right?
Thanks, Katrina. I'm going to start with a disclaimer, because being a last-minute invitee to the floor, it's a bit like Twitter, really. So what you'll get is not necessarily a reflected corporate view, but it's a personal view. Maybe that's a good thing.
That's as good, yeah.
So I think a bit like Claire in the previous session, what you'll get is glass half full. So I'm going to start with opportunity. And I think really it's about recognising and reflecting on what we've already achieved as a sector, as an industry, and what we've currently got, and things that are in the immediate pipeline in terms of levels of investment, such as the great news with more investment coming to BBC Wales, and particularly with regards to English language television production. We've got, and Claire referred to this, a sustainable level of income. It's never as much as we'd really like, but it's relatively certain. And that in itself provides an opportunity, some form of security for people looking to both remain in the industry, because we've got a huge amount of talented people already employed in the industry, but also in terms of new entrants. We haven't really cracked the problem in terms of being truly open and welcoming. There are too many barriers to entry, some of them perceived and some of them real, but they're both challenges for us to address. So we've got a lot of things going for us, and I think that's the opportunity is to build on that, and I'm sure we'll cover some of those things in more detail. So I think the challenge really is about us all working together, in true collaboration, to try and make the most of the opportunities that we've got, because that the risk is that we actually fail to be bigger than the sum of our parts.
Great. Okay. Challenges and opportunities.
Challenges and opportunities. Well, first of all, thank you very much for offering me the opportunity to speak to you here today. It is unusual to have a trades union officer, and that's exactly what I am. I'm very honoured to come here amongst you. I've been here before and sit in exactly where you sit in. But the reason that I've come here is to offer that alternative view of the industry that we are all passionate about and that we all know and love. And that alternative picture is the downside of the industry, frankly. It's about accessibility to begin with. How do you access a fulfilling career in this industry? That's difficult enough if you're very aware and you have all your faculties, yeah? And you've got a degree of a good bank manager or a very good parents behind you. But what if you don't have those prerequisites? Access to the industry is very important. We all love public service broadcasting. The premise of public service broadcasting, I would say, if it's to be successful, is that it reflects us all in Wales on the screen, big or small, yeah? So the difficulty is, though, that, and I like very much what Claire said, particularly she must have read Bechdu and the NUJ submission about levies. I think that's a great way for us to have a discussion later on or for another day. But where I disagree with her, I believe that she reflected the view that film and television had been protected, unlike the journalists in the print media. Well, I started this job in 1991. I'm still encouraged by the things that I get to do on a daily basis. I'm encouraged, though, because I don't work the 12, 13, 14 hours that many of the crew, that many of you employ. I'm able to be excited about my career because I have a manageable work-life balance, yeah? But where I disagree with that, when I started, we had the BBC, we had, I think it was over 1,200 people working in ITV, and that was the stable workforce where you got a job, you did one interview, and you entered the industry. I was ever so pleased to get this job, and in the December, just before I started, it was the announcements of, I think it was 600 job losses at ITV. Then I thought, bloody hell, should I have gone for this? However, the moral of the story is this, look, is that whatever has happened, and technology has largely driven that, whatever has happened, the workforce have collaborated in that. It's the workforce that have implemented and in large part invented what we do and improves what we do. But that workforce is failing to have a sufficient and adequate work-life balance because they're working 10, 12 hours a day. So I would say what we need to do against to be able to challenge those precepts, okay? What we should be doing is looking exactly as Gareth is saying, is looking to be collaborative. I've got some ideas of what collaboration would mean. It would be collaboration between the trainers and the education establishments. It would be with the major broadcasters, yeah? It would be with the Welsh Government as well, okay?
Can we come back to that in a little bit? Because I take your point that the collaboration, and we've heard Angela's talk about it earlier on. I'll take that in a second, okay Dave? Alex, yeah. What about you? Challenges and opportunities from you?
Yeah, so I mean, collaboration is the word that's coming out here. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is, I don't think this is just a starting point, but having everyone here in the room together today is showing that's really beginning and everyone's focusing on it. So yeah, thank you for inviting me down. So I think that talking about, Gareth, I think you mentioned being more than the sum of the parts, making the most of what we've got. I think there are so many avenues to talk about it, which we're already touching on. So just talking about Wales and different parts of Wales, so making the most of the talent all around the country, not just having it centrally focused. Obviously we have that problem all over the United Kingdom, where there will be pockets of specialism and talent in certain areas. All of the statistics that we have at Creative Skillset show that as much as you can reach into all of the different distant pockets of the country and find talent and pool it and also grow talent in situ in their areas and create creative hubs, that's going to be the way to create that collaborative environment. So that's one aspect of collaboration. But of course you've also got, which again has already been touched on, collaboration in terms of bringing in the most of the talent of the entire workforce. So breaking down those barriers of which are standing in the way of people with disabilities, as well as the geography. And so with the initiatives at Creative Skillset, I think you mentioned before that the Foot in the Door program. So that's something that we've been helping out with. And so that's I've got the areas here. So that's targeting entrants to do a 1 month sort of intensive mentoring training program for people in Caerphilly, Newport, Torrefen and Monmouthshire. Is that right?
Is this your pronunciation of Welsh?
Yeah, sorry.
Places, yeah.
I haven't got headphones for this. Yeah. So making the most of that kind of initiative. So generally, with Creative Skillset, we have moved from a situation where we had a lot of funding from government and lottery funds to a situation where we have fewer. But we are aligning ourselves with the BFI strategy. And we've secured some funding to align ourselves with their 10-year strategy, and that's in line with all of this kind of thing UK-wide. Okay. So we want to sort of be investing in more initiatives like that, which I can talk about a bit later if anyone wants to know.
Gareth, I'm going to come back to you. We talked in my introduction about Rothlock. What do you think has been the contribution of Rothlock to the Welsh workforce?
Well, you won't be surprised to hear me say it's been tremendously positive. Just to talk about the scale of Rothlock, you know, it's got three big shows pretty much continuously producing throughout the year, and wherever we can, we'll squeeze extra shows in there. So Doctor Who, Casualty, Publicum, You know, big shows, big budget shows. You know, you've got upwards of 40 million of business going through just that facility every year. So clearly that translates very significantly into economic benefit and into jobs. You know, and when it's firing on all cylinders, which is pretty often, you could have 600, 700 people working in that building, and the vast majority of those will be, you know, freelancers, mm-hmm. or certainly not BBC staff, if you like. So clearly there's a huge benefit, huge economic benefit, but also in terms of developing those, you know, necessary, vital creative skills, you know, the creative opportunities, and across all sorts of disciplines, you know, from writing to on screen, to production management, through to sort of electricians and carpentry, and all those sorts of things, absolutely necessary components of a successful drama production. And, you know, BBC, obviously, publicly funded, there's a public service role to play to go beyond just setting up that facility and enjoying the sort of creative success of those shows. It's about this question of sustainability. So we're 4 or 5 years into an apprenticeship scheme. It's been very successful. Over 75% of the apprentices, which are, and there are about, I think, well over 40 apprentices have been through that scheme. Well over 75% of those people have been retained in the industry in paid in paid employment. So really effective, really sustainable. Of course, you know, that scheme on its own isn't going to support the industry.
We'll talk about some of the schemes that might come up. I see you nodding a lot, Dave, about that.
Yeah,
would you
yeah.
agree that Ross Lock has made a tangible difference to both the
yeah.
opportunities in Wales, but maybe perhaps the quality of work in Wales?
Yes, I think I would agree it has, really. I think we were extremely fortunate that BBC Wales took the opportunity it did when it laid down those plans and those proposals those years ago. I think it did get off to a rocky start because, as much as all of those tangible benefits, including to the economy, it got off to a rocky start because we found that production companies were bringing in heads of department or the crew were coming in from London. And that got to a situation where one significant DOP in Wales simply changed his agent, and he had an agent in London advocate for him, and he ended up working 3 miles from home. But that is important because it's about confidence, isn't it? I'm sure that people in this industry are confident. I know them. I know many of them. The difficulty was that public perception, or the perception of a competent workforce in Wales, wasn't identified certainly outside of Wales, and the London-centric system was working against building a sustainable workforce.
David, do you mind if I just jump in with my sort of glass half full perspective? And you're absolutely right, of course. But actually, that's the industry. The industry is, out of necessity, needs to be pretty mobile. So you can look at the industry on a UK basis. And I think what happened, and absolutely open to discussion about whether it was in the right proportion, but you had skills imported and people imported because we had to hit the ground running if we're going to make the most of the opportunity. But over time, clearly, a sort of a growth in the indigenous supply of that talent. And I think you'll never want to get 100% Welsh producing in Wales. You'll always want, because of creative reasons, a sort of a diversity in terms of that workforce, but it's about hitting the right balance. So I agree with your point, but I think that's the
I don't mind you interrupting me at all, except I was going to say this, though, that why is it important to Wales? It's important about perception of confidence, as I said. It's important about having the ability to bring those major productions here. But I was going to say, Gareth, that we don't want to be fooled into thinking that this industry is simply concentrating on Wales, or that we are small-minded, because the important factor about this workforce that the union learned many years ago is that we work in an international industry. The issue that I was referring to, Gareth, wasn't that there weren't enough Welsh people working on it, because that's a dangerous precept for the union. Because for Welsh people that might not have been working on it, there were Becdu members from London working on it. But do you know what? There were Bechtel members from Cardiff working in London at the same time. So we mustn't fall into the trap of being too twee about the industry in Wales. There are elements of this industry that we would serve best to remember about the culture and the pride of we in Wales that we want to see reflected on our screens.
Do I get the impression from both of you that you would agree that the perception of Wales as a talent base, as a production base, has changed?
Absolutely, and mm-hmm. I think in the original question, you know, was beginning in terms of Roethlock, and I talked about Roethlock specifically. But I think what's you know, what we should celebrate is that this ain't just about the BBC
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
It may have started off that way, but that was a long time ago. You know, yes, we'd sort of celebrate sort of, you know, tenfold increase in drama production
yeah.
Business across a 10-year period, which is yeah, absolutely brilliant. But you look at what beyond Roethlock, and it's already been mentioned, you know, that corridor of high-end drama production from Swansea through Bridgend, Cardiff, Newport, and Chepstow is, you know, what a brilliant outcome in terms of,
yeah.
you know, the impact that has on the workforce, but the profile and therefore the perception is obviously really positive.
But is it making the Welsh workforce more sustainable?
It's, you don't want to be complacent. So it's like celebrate where we are, but yeah, the question of sustainability is something that everybody in the industry who wants the industry to succeed has to be concerned about. So we need to continue to worry about that and to intervene with all the measures at our disposal. And it, you know, obviously we'll come back to the sort of collaboration point on that
we
as
will.
Well.
I don't want this to be dominated by the BBC, but I do have to ask you about BBC Studios, and I do appreciate that you're not over BBC Studios. But what do you think the impact
of
BBC...
Is that written in emotional sense?
Well, I don't know, you tell us. If you want to have a public cry about it, then we're here to support you, Gareth.
There's plenty of healthy debate, put it that way.
I suppose, what are your hopes for BBC Studios? Because
yeah,
obviously that's
well.
Going to be a big impact on the landscape here in Wales, and obviously we've over the last couple of years... There's been a strategy of centres for excellence, as you said, around drama. How do those kind of things become reconciled?
They're absolutely reconcilable. I think, you know, going back to that previous point about sustainability, so studios as a perhaps a slightly different remit
mm-hmm.
to in-house production as was, and that it needs to be self-sustaining. It needs to be commercially successful, but its ambitions and its values are absolutely true to the BBC core purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be seeking to win commissions from the BBC, but it'll also have the opportunity to win commissions from other places as well. So it wants to be successful. We want it to be successful. It's you know, it's a part of what will continue to be a successful ecology of content suppliers, and the in being successful, it'll return revenues to the BBC, to BBC commissioners that can then you know recycle that money in terms of opportunities you know, for the whole industry. It can only be successful if it supports the wider industry in terms of that question of investing in skills and investing in the workforce.
So will it have a training agenda? Will training be part of its remit?
It will certainly be looking to continue to participate in things like the apprenticeship scheme. It'll certainly be looking to influence sort of training opportunities that the industry offers. There is a note of caution here, which many people will appreciate, which is because the BBC Studio is in a new place and it's competing
mm-hmm.
commercially, it absolutely can't have an unfair advantage over other industry suppliers. So anything that the BBC henceforth makes available to or seeks to make available to studios in terms of training or skills development opportunities absolutely has to be an industry-wide offer, and that's a good thing.
Did you want to come in on that?
I just want to say one thing before I come on to studios is, and it's to do with the international aspect of production in Wales, because when I did start the job, we did have a very successful Welsh language production centre in Wales, which unfortunately, though it was very successful in Wales, it was nominated for an Oscar, for example, it had a world-class animation sector, that wasn't recognised. It was seen as too niche, it was just Welsh language. But we must never forget the groundwork that was laid by those independents working to Welsh language production at SOC. Studios. Well, I thought it was the maddest thing going, to be honest with you, yeah? Our opposition to studios, right, is well recorded. And it was based on the fact that the BBC didn't have exactly a good track record where it externalised elements of its operations. And that was a worry for us, because if it didn't succeed, we were concerned, because you remember, I am a trades union officer, we were worried about the employment rights of people that were being externalised, and further than that, if they were going to be transferred, what about their redundancy? We must never forget, well, I'm going to remind you that many of my members in the BBC, whatever the independent sector may think of them, are passionate about public service broadcasting. They're bloody passionate about it. So let's not think that because you work in the BBC and you want to stay in the BBC, that it's somehow a plea because you don't want to enter this marketplace out there. What they see is the ability to take the opportunities of scale that the unified BBC was offering them to do these somewhat niche programming. Mm. And the example that we've got most recently, and I would say with every respect, Gareth, that getting off on Songs of Praise isn't the best start, I would observe to you, because the members that are being to be transferred there simply don't want to leave the BBC. Now, what do you do about that then? So the challenge is for the BBC is to answer the criticism of those staff that signed up to the BBC, are passionate about its principles, and want to continue to work on that programme, and yet, imagine it, if you went home tonight, and if any of you were employed, you simply got a letter to say, oh, you're being to be transferred, and all those terms and conditions that you thought you were going to expect, or what you signed up for, may not be exactly what you did sign up for. So what I'm asking for is the empathy, the ability to think about what those 30 people in Salford and the other fixed-term freelance people that work on Songs of Praise are facing this weekend. Why do I think, look, I'm not a high flyer in terms of broadcasting at all right? I'm a trades union officer, but you know what I worried about, and there's somebody in this room, probably they'll tell me why I'm wrong. Look, it was a defence, isn't it, to Whittingdale. It was a defence to the Conservative government. That is my opinion, okay? It was the BBC saying, we are going to do these things and we are going to be influencing the market in a fair way, okay? We're going to be opening up that opportunity. What I worry about, see, Gareth, is one day some minister in London of the persuasion, which might be the same colour as my jacket, might be thinking, wait a minute, we're paying now. We've managed the trick that the BBC is going to pay for over 75s. We've managed the trick at so much, well, all of the production in studios is up for contestability up until 2020, but what the hell are we giving them all this money for? You know, that's simplistic, it might be naive, but isn't it something about the ability of the cross-subsidy that the BBC brought, that it needn't have been battered by winds and what was happening in the independent sector. It was the certainty going forward. It's been replaced today of all days with, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead to finish your thoughts.
Well, it's the uncertainty going forward and the ability that the premise is that the BBC may win all of it, will lose some of it, and what is going to replace that? Rightly, as you say, Gareth, you'll be able to compete in the independent sector. We hope that the independent sector will step up to the plate, because whilst I'm criticising the BBC, my last point, we do have the ability to spend 18 months talking about studios, reaching an agreement, because we have faith in the ability to criticise each other, but arrive at an agreement, and that's very important. That's what the unions get out of the BBC.
I'm sure this will come up again in questions, but I'll just take a very quick response from you, Gareth. Did you want to come
back
in?
Yeah, I think it's simply to acknowledge that, you know, in a sense, we are where we are. It is the old model was broken. It had to be fixed. It had to change. And this was the best solution on offer. What's first and foremost important is that it's about creative competition for the benefit of the audiences. And obviously, we're minded to ensure that that model now succeeds, and it succeeds in Wales, and it'll succeed if it's got a sustainable workforce.
Okay, I'm sure this will come up again in the questions, but I just want to move on slightly. Alex, I'll come to you for a second. In the previous session, we heard from Claire about some of the changes to online in terms of digital platforms. Here we're hearing about different changes to economic models and things like that. How are these changes impacting on the skills agenda or the training agenda from your perspective?
I don't know how broadly it went because my train was late, so I missed it. But the sort of skills shortages aren't just limited to that, and it's obviously not a problem that just applies to Wales. It's a completely UK-wide issue. So as I was saying earlier, we're aligning ourselves with the BFI. We've supported them and the information they've got together, and they've identified, I think, 36 shortage areas across the UK. We will be looking at that. So, I'm sorry.
How has the skills agenda changed in response to some of the changes in terms of the platforms?
So the skills agenda is like fundamentally based on those shortage areas, which cover across all of this, including broadcast. But it goes a lot deeper than just those digital skills. I think it also came up earlier. I think we're talking about it's transferable skills, it's the business skills required. I think a lot of creatives come into this industry, into all of these industries, wanting to just create and don't end up learning the sort of transferable business skills, learning about intellectual property, and again, coming back to the international thing that keeps coming through here, not really thinking in an international context about those exports of what they might be producing, whether it's broadcast, whether it's television, film, or games. So I think that's an area that that needs to be focused on.
Okay. We might as well talk a little bit about collaboration, because I think that leads into the kind of collaborations. All three of you talked about collaborations. I'm assuming the kind of collaborations you're talking about are public-private, between within the industry and outside. What are some of the obstacles to this collaboration? Because we often talk about collaboration, particularly in an industry like Wales, which is regarded as relatively small, but why don't we collaborate more? Why are we still calling for collaboration after all these years?
I think it's an awareness of what the problem is, you know, and I think this is a great opportunity to call out that actually there is a problem.
So what is the problem?
So I think you touched on it earlier in terms of demand and supply. Yeah, celebrate the huge success we've had in high-end production and the growth in the sector, but that means that demand is outstripping supply. So there's a problem there, or put another way, there's an opportunity to address that in terms of beneficial impacts locally. So I think awareness is the first thing. I think data, I'm not sure that I could easily put my hands on a commonly or consensual piece of information of relevant data. I'm sure plenty of data exists. It's not brought together in a way that is in a common language that the industry will understand and also understand what the message that data is telling us. And it is, you know, perhaps something much more down to earth about all the sort of people involved in the sector, and that's about education, further education, higher education, the broadcasters, S4C, BBC Wales, ITV, the supply chain, the independent producers, BBC Studios, skills agencies, and government, of course, both UK and at a Wales level. And if you were to sort of look across, you know, what's happening now, you'd come up with quite a long list of specific initiatives that are seeking to address the removal of barriers to entry, being more socially inclusive, being more open and connected to the wider population, and at different levels, entry levels, the CLAW leadership in terms of ethnicity, for example. So there are lots of things going on, But are they connected? And probably not.
That's an interesting point that Gareth made about knowledge. What don't we know about the industry?
I was going to say, when you were mentioning that, I think a lot of that data either doesn't exist or, as you say, it's not collected at any place. It's an agreed source. And so I think that's one of the reasons for that is the nature of a lot of these industries with it's very fractured in terms of lots of freelancing and short-term work, short-term projects. Actually, some of that data is just not captured. And it's actually a bit, it's sort of word of mouth.
So what would you want to capture?
Information on disability rates. It's really mm-hmm. hard to make policies about how to address that if you don't actually have that raw data in the first place. I think our report from 2015, mm-hmm. even that was anecdotal for disability because it just there isn't a source for it at the moment. What I was going to say though is that going forward with the apprenticeship levy and the apprenticeship program, the way that's all changing, I think that the essence of that, the emphasis of that entire program is to have more collaboration between industry and education mm-hmm. and break down some of those barriers. So obviously you've been running some apprenticeship programs at BBC and going forward that will have to shift and change according to the apprenticeship levy, and I'm sure lots of discussions are being had at the moment about that. So how that all falls out in the end is going to dictate how we're tackling this.
Shall we invite everyone? Oh, sorry, Gareth.
Very quickly then. I think apprenticeships, obviously key, you know, traineeships as well. The BBC has set a stall out. It wants to deliver 400 apprenticeships by next year. But I think, being a devolved mat, that I think we would all benefit from a sort of a clarity around how the apprenticeship levy would apply itself in Wales.
Can I say one thing? Yeah, okay, we talk about that entry point, but we also have to think about the sustainability of that workforce that exists already. Mm-hmm. Because if we can't look after that workforce, what we're going to end up with is entry points with a revolving door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's that's a huge amount of new entrants, kind of the yeah. programs for new entrants, yeah. but where are the kind of mid-career yeah. support systems? I'm going to go to the audience, so if anybody has any questions, if you raise your hand. If you maybe tell us your name and where you're from, that would be great. I'll go here and then I'll go in the front, if that's okay.
John Geraint, Green Bay Media. When I was chairing the Skillset Advisory Council in Wales, we were able to use a lot of European funding to support the development of skills here in Wales. It's a crucial area for the workforce. How do we equip our workers with the right kind of skills that they need? Obviously, even as I speak, we are sending a letter to Brussels, which will cut off that European yep. supply. We've also seen S4C much less able to continue the generous support mm-hmm. Of skills training here in Wales because of the funding cuts that it has had. Now BBC Studios, there's a change there. What confidence can we have that skills training will continue to be properly funded here in Wales at a time when Creative Skillset as well is also kind of withdrawing yeah. to London, it seems to me.
Alex, do you want to start and then we'll go across?
Yeah, I will start. We have lost quite a few funding streams, but we have sought new ones, and we have got a commitment from the BFI that focuses on the skills shortage areas, which are completely across the UK. And so we will be still funding that. It's not certain yet. I can't confirm how much it is yet, and I can't confirm how that's going to feed through. But there is still a commitment to be funding skills training.
Will there be a commitment to funding skills particularly that are needed in Wales?
Yes.
Or are these UK-wide?
No, obviously the data we have is UK-wide. We do have some data specifically for Wales, and we will be focusing. It's not even just that. It's any kind of regions where there are sort of creative hubs anywhere in the country. I think that's the point. We will be focusing on those individually.
So there'll be a regional response.
There'll be regional.
To
yeah, we don't have our regional office anymore in Wales, and we don't have it in Scotland. But we from our hub in London, we will be looking into that and doing it specifically for those areas. And also, sorry, we in terms of skills and frameworks. Unlike England, where we're having to go through trailblazer groups to develop new apprenticeship standards, which is a great way to get businesses and education to communicate. That's a great mechanism the government's forced everyone's hand on, but it does make sense. That doesn't need to happen in Wales, because we can rely on the existing frameworks that are here, which is great because we can hit the ground running. We've got a working framework that's already in use. We don't have to do any redevelopment on that. But it might mean that we need to find other ways to connect businesses and education to ensure that when we're reviewing those standards, they do reflect the massive changes in industry, which, as we know, is quickly changing.
Yeah, because that's obviously one of the challenges in terms of how do you create a skills agenda that keeps pace with the changes within the industry.
I mean, but just to sort of come in again, very quickly, we don't know the specific answer, do we, John? But I think it's I think we've got to recognise. Hopefully, this is not a political point. But you know, the creative industries is high on the agenda for the Welsh government. So you talked about Creative Wales. Don't know the detail, but you know, that's.
What would you like to see them do?
Well, again, I think it comes back to the coordination and some sort of commitment as the underpinning and the leaning into the creative industries that they have demonstrated over previous years.
Okay. Yeah, look, there are systems there. We want to place on the record the what we've gained from the industry from the past. S4C, TAC, ITV, the BBC, Skillset, all of that developed a tremendous training opportunity in Wales, okay? It continues today with Rodri. I believe Rodri's doing some work with the skill set and continuing training. But when I talk about cooperation, it's about the ability of us. There is an old-fashioned thing called the Wales Union Learning Fund that comes out of the Welsh Government, okay? Bechdu, along with sister unions, the Musicians Union, Writers Guild, have accessed that training for the last 10 years. We've trained hundreds of people in Wales. It is, so far as it exists now, the only model that we've got. So when I talk about partnership, it's about accessing and making the Welsh Government have a look at the schemes that work, that deliver training, and more importantly, the training that the industry recognised, to give you qualifications that the industry recognised and allows you to continue to train and retrain to work in the industry going forward. Sorry.
I can't be the only one who's wondering why there isn't anyone here from Creative Wales, because as Gareth said, the role of, you know, I think we're all grown up enough in this room to think that it isn't up to the government to sort all this out. However, the government role around coordinating and leading in terms of strategy is absolutely critical, and it feels like there's a huge piece of the jigsaw missing in this session.
Sorry, I'll take the chap at the back and then I'll come to you in front of the
other. Yeah, can I have a question in Gymraeg, please? Hugh Jones, S4C. Ddim i wrth ddweud unrhyw beth sydd wedi cael ei ddweud am bwysigrwydd y swyddi a'r hyfforddiant yn enwedig ar yr ochr dechnegol, ond rwy'n licio jyst roi chydig o bwyslais ar yn benodol ar yr ochr o hyfforddi a roi mynediad i bobl sydd yn mynd i ddod â llais gwreiddiol, creadigol i'n sgriniau ni. Achos mae'n dyfodol ni fel darlledwyr yn dibynnu yn Saesneg ac yn Gymraeg ar gael lleisiau gwreiddiol sydd â rhywbeth i'w ddweud, y mae cynulleidfa yn mynd i ymateb iddyn nhw ac yn mynd i deimlo bod yna angen i gymryd rhan, i gyfranogi mewn cyfryngau Cymraeg a Chymreig. Felly mae'n gwestiwn i yn deillio o'r angen i sicrhau fod yna ddiwylliant cyfoethog o gwmpas y diwylliant teledu. Mae nid jyst diwylliant darlledu sy'n sefyll ar ei draed ei hun ydi o, ond mae cwestiwn ynglyn â o ble mae'r lleisiau yma yn mynd i ddod. Ac os da ni'n edrych ar y bobl sydd wedi cyfrannu ac sydd yn dal i gyfrannu heddiw, maen nhw'n dod o ddiwylliant amrywiol cyfoethog sydd ddim jyst yn ddiwylliant teledu. Mm. Felly dwi'n meddwl bod angen meddwl, yn ymwneud â'r ochr greadigol, ynglyn â ble mae'r partneriaethau, ble mae'r llwybrau i ddod â phobl i fewn i'r diwydiant sydd â rhywbeth i ddweud ac sydd yn gallu cael y cyfnod a'r amser i ddysgu crefft tra mae nhw yn paratoi ffordd i wneud rhywbeth gwreiddiol i hunain.
Does anybody want to make a response? Sorry, does anybody want to make a response to that?
I think the difficulty here is that the industry today is above all else risk averse. It doesn't want to give people a chance to learn a craft. There are people that have worked in the industry for 15, 20 years, and they are working extremely long hours. If you enter in the industry at a younger age, you have to make a decision soon. are you going to want a social life, heavens above, a family life? So the partnership, again, I want to come back to, the partnership means that each of those partners does take on board that certain things have to change. And what has to change is we have to, again, allow people in Wales to dream about what they what story they want to tell. Because what happened with the dislocation over digital broadcasting, it meant that we became focused on what the economy was. We became focused on, are we delivering in this digital forum? What we want to get back to, and I'm sorry to say this because I come over, my job here today is very important. I want to bring some messages from my members. I need to do that in a way that is hopefully informative but also engaging. So I'm not looking back at some twee world, right? But that world did run on clockwork. It allowed people to come into this industry. The budgets were sufficient. When you were a trainee, you were a trainee. You were supernumerary. And you weren't an intern. And by the way, there's a thing called the about wages. You cannot be a volunteer. You have to be supernumerary. So here, what I'm saying is I understand where you're coming from, and I think the conversation we would like to have is, how do we allow those people from these different parts of Wales the access to the industry, but the ability to be mentored and brought along so that their story ends up in front of the world?
And I think that's something that we'll probably come back to in the Welsh language panel again, because I think it's a huge issue. Here in the front, and then I'll...
Roderick Talvin, the BBC. Just a couple of things. Just to echo what Hugh said, I think the technical skills training, the craft skills training is critical. But we've all talked about the sort of cultural deficit that we've seen over recent years. And I think the focus on writers, the focus on new directors, they are all essential components. Because in the end, it is their vision that will deliver the outstanding output. And more importantly than that, perhaps, or just as importantly, if we're serious about holding IP in Wales and building our economy rather than supporting the creation of IP for others, be they international businesses or UK-wide businesses, that process of where the ideas come from and how we support the idea makers is really important. I would say, and I don't want to add to the remit of this group, I think the other critical skills issue...
We're already bursting at the seams.
Well, the other critical skills issue, which really goes back to Claire's presentation earlier today, is a journalistic one.
Okay.
And it's very interesting, lots of reaction when BBC Scotland announced the other day that they're creating 80 new journalists in BBC Scotland, and we'll be making our announcements in due course. All I would say is this, if we announced we were going to appoint 80 new journalists this year, the impact on the commercial print sector in Wales would be colossal. And this question of where the new generation of journalists come from and how they are trained and how we make that training as thorough as it was in past years is a pretty fundamental one.
Sian, I'll come to you.
Mae Llywodraeth Cymru di ymrwymo i 100,000 o prentisiaethau dros cyfnod dros y pedwar blynedd nesaf. A y diwydiant greadigol un o'r diwydiant mwyaf yng Nghymru. Felly, pa gyflogwyr, mae'r BBEC yn cymryd prentisiaethau ymlaen, mae ITV sydd tipyn yn llai yn cymryd prentisiaethau ymlaen, ond ydy'r sector annibynnol yn ôl mynd i cymryd prentisiaethau ymlaen, achos bydd rhaid os ydym ni'n mynd i cael mwy o prentisiaethau yng Nghymru.
Does anybody want to speak on behalf of the independence?
I hesitate to do that, but I would imagine so very much. I think one of the challenges here is not so much whether you're the BBC publicly funded or an independent supplier seeking to win commissions from wherever you can. What the BBC has is scale, and that scale and that certainty of funding means that there should be, rightly be, a greater proportion of the responsibility on the BBC, but I am sure independent production companies would equally want to welcome in
different people with different ideas, because that's that supports the creative agenda. You know, that's the lifeblood.
Well, we need to make sure that whatever proposals come out from the Welsh Government, and this is our role to influence the Welsh Government, but if we can speak with one voice as the sector, we need to make sure that the Welsh Government takes on board the size of those independent companies, because many of them initially, well, some years ago you started off, you were probably just working from home as one individual or at most with a partner. We need to establish somehow a fair playing field between all of those different type of companies. And we need to be able to encourage the small companies to aspire for best practice, the same as we expect of the larger companies.
One final question, and then I think, unfortunately,
Sorry.
I just want to quickly add to that. Large organisations like the BBC have that size and weight and funding to do it. And smaller organisations, SMEs and micro businesses, which dominate the market across these sectors, will need in some way to work together. And again, we're back to collaboration. And there will be, Crazy Skill Set are going to set up an apprenticeship training agency to bring that together. Because it's not also just the size of the industries, it's in each sector. It's also the jobs they're working on, projects which might only last 2 or 3 weeks. It makes it impossible to manage and run an apprenticeship program and give a meaningful education experience for
in those kind of short periods of time.
Ruth McElroy, University of South Wales. The government has announced as part of its industry strategy that Peter Bazalgette will be doing a review of the creative industries. If there was one thing you could see happen as part of that review for a genuine strategic intervention for the workforce, particularly in the context of Brexit, what would it be?
I think it would be something I talked about a little bit earlier, is quality of information about the scale of the challenge.
In the context of Brexit, it's an interesting conversation we had yesterday, isn't it? Look, the worry for us as trades unionists about Brexit is the wholesale destruction of employment rights that we've grown to enjoy. For the first time ever, just those few short years ago, did we ever experience that you had a legal entitlement to holidays? I heard even this morning when they were talking about Brexit, the opportunities of Brexit is to do away with all of this red tape. What we need to encourage the creative workforce with the Welsh Government and the Welsh Government is to make sure that when it talks about, forgive me, the scheme about the trades union bill, about closer partnership with employers and educationalists, that's what we want. We, if you forgive me, I'll be giving evidence tomorrow to the Welsh Government, and I'd get into the point that I think I'm saying the same thing again and again. I might be the opportunity turn for them. However, what we want is to sit down properly with the sector, to understand it in terms of the large employer and the small SME and the different pressures on them. And the role that the Welsh Government can play is to make sure that that access of opportunity is fair for all, and that when they're employed, they're protected and enjoy good workers' rights.
Alex, do you want to have a final word?
Yeah, just a little bit to add to that. If it follows the same kind of procedure that they followed for when planning the apprenticeship levy and the meetings they had with the creative industries with that, then it did take a little bit of pressure, but in the end they did consider the complexities of our industry as in its own right.
Yeah.
And that's where we are now.
Thank you. I'm being told that we're running out of time. So we haven't covered even quarter of the things that we were going to cover, and this to me testifies to how rich and important an area this is. And particularly I'm struck by some of the discussion around collaboration, the appetite for collaboration, and particularly the need for joined up thinking. There seems to me to be a lot of different groups and organizations thinking and intervening in this. How do we perhaps join up all those to create a more coherent strategy for Wales? And it'll be interesting to see how does the new agency Creative Wales respond to that. These are some of the questions that are coming up, that are on the do poll, if you'd like to have a look at those and respond to those. I believe that IWA will kind of collate all the answers and will publish them, so a kind of an interesting kind of snapshot about what the attitude of people is towards the some of the issues within the Welsh workforce. Okay, I know everybody's dying for lunch now, so can I thank the panel for their thoughtful responses, and I believe lunch is out in the toilet. Thank you.